Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about a topic which a lot of people have written in to ask me to discuss on the show because they're interested in what's going on related to net neutrality. And net neutrality is a big deal right now because President Obama has signaled his support for reclassifying the internet under Title II of the Telecommunications Act, which would basically involve regulating the internet like it was a public utility. I'm reading this from Nick Gillespie over at Reason, who writes that basically what it would do is it would change the level of regulation from the current level, which is Title I, over to Title II. Proponents of net neutrality and Title II reclassification contend that more regulation of companies such as Comcast and Time Warner is the only way to keep the internet free and wide open as it's been without such rules. Net neutrality advocates are especially worried about fast lanes, or what they call paid prioritization, in which internet services or customers would be forced to pay ISPs in order to make sure streaming video and other services get to users smoothly. Everyone might remember the big hullabaloo when Netflix was forced to pay more because I believe there was a chart that came out that showed that something like 75% of all internet traffic in the evening is from Netflix. And a lot of people who believe in the free market think, hey, if we're using most of the amount, this one side is using most of the amount of traffic, perhaps they should be required to pay more because they're using more of the service. And net neutrality advocates are basically saying that all traffic should be created the same, that there shouldn't be such a thing as a fast lane or what have you. But picture yourself in looking at it like a regular highway. This is just the information superhighway, and we're saying, you know, the internet is just a series of tubes, perhaps, and that's really what it is. And so if you think about this like a highway, basically what they're doing is saying, hey, let's have some toll lanes, or let's charge a little bit more so that you can go faster over in this lane. And that's a way to offer expanded services. Your cell phone providers do certain things like that. They'll meter your usage of broadband. They'll say, hey, you can use 2 gigs a month, or you can buy a package for 10 gigs a month, or you can pay a premium so that you can have unlimited access to the internet. And certainly that has been a successful model for wireless providers, and I'm not sure why it wouldn't be successful for broadband providers as well, other than the fact that a lot of people are really ragey about it and that the left is very angry and butthurt and wants everything to be equal and fair and blah, 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 blah. They think that the government can offer that. So let's see what Nick Gillespie has to say. He writes in Time Magazine, this is a snippet. Gillespie says, let's leave aside the inconvenient fact that reclassification under Title II wouldn't actually prevent paid prioritization deals that ISPs are constantly managing online traffic in all sorts of ways. And the FCC's legal standing to regulate the internet is far from a settled matter. The real question is whether experiments in delivering content and services would necessarily be bad for the rest of us. The answer is no. Clemson University economic historian Thomas W. Hazlitt defines net neutrality as a set of rules regulating the business model of your local ISP. Now, that definition gets the heart of the matter, Gillespie says. There are specific interests who are doing well by the current system, and they want to maintain the status quo via government regulations. That's understandable, but the idea that the government will do a good job of regulating the internet is unconvincing, to say the least. The most likely outcome is that regulators will freeze in place today's business models, thereby slowing innovation and change. Absolutely true. Gillespie goes on saying, according to the FCC's own findings, the speed and variety of American internet connections are growing substantially every year. Despite claims that monopolistic ISPs don't have to listen to customers, 80% of households have at least two providers that can deliver the internet at 10 megabits a second or faster, which is the FCC's top rating. It's in the increasingly intense battle over customers that a thousand flowers will bloom. All sorts of interesting, stupid, and dumb innovations will be tried, users will be empowered, and tomorrow's internet will look radically different from today's. Yeah, so you see, like, these are the kinds of things that I worried about. If we're trying to stifle innovation, well, let's pass net neutrality. You know, remember, people like Netflix and other major companies, corporations, who would have to pay higher costs, and then, of course, the consumers who would cost passed down to them, they're all going to want to keep the business model like it is, at the very least. People think that net neutrality is going to change anything. As a matter of fact, it's probably the opposite. It's going to entrench a lot of these business interests. And obviously, if I was in I'm in an industry right now, I'm in the publishing industry, I'm producing this podcast for you right now. Every time Facebook changes their algorithm, it screws me and destroys my customer base in a way, and it forces me to, you know, to reroute my what I'm doing and all of that, and I have to respond to that. Well, don't you think that Facebook should be classified as a public utility now? I mean, we own it. We're all using Facebook, and you know, we're getting something for free. But I wish that it was regulated, because every time they change their algorithm, it harms my business model. Dang it! So if only we could get the government to step in and tell Facebook that they should stop changing their algorithm and keep things the way they are. That way, I can stay in business and I don't have to compete anymore against all of these upstart blogs that are trying to undercut me and doing a damn good job at it, unfortunately. But that's a conversation for another day. I've got to compete in the free market, and so should everybody else. But let's go on. Let's discuss. I want to get to some of the solutions that I think people are most interested in discussing here. Before we get there, though, before we discuss what I think is the problem, we're going to talk about the types of government. We're going to talk about what the real problem is that I think has been the real problem with net neutrality and the problem with internet regulation. But before we do, let's go ahead and make sure that we understand net neutrality here. I'm pulling from Reason again. This is a separate article by Grant Babcock, who says that net neutrality and public utility style regulation are about internet freedom, just not the way that advocates think. Now, Obama has obviously come out in favor of net neutrality and FCC and the FCC changing the way the internet service providers are regulated. Ted Cruz came out and said net neutrality is Obamacare for the internet. He got a lot of hell from the left on that, but he's absolutely right. Let's just discuss really quick what it is and what it isn't. Net neutrality is about how the traffic flows through the internet, right? So when you send a message over the internet, it gets broken up into these little tiny pieces, and they're called packets. And then each packet sort of gets passed around, eventually arriving at its destination. It's like, you know, I've got a letter in my hands right now. You know, if I tore up this letter and I put the parts in a bunch of different envelopes and then mailed them each separately, when they arrived, they're reassembled in the right order. So it's like sort of like the transporter from Star Trek. You know, if we're going to send Captain Kirk into space somewhere, then how the transporter works is they break him down and then they rearrange him back when he gets to his destination. That's kind of how the internet works with data. Sometimes people use net neutrality to refer to a whole bunch of ideas, right, that are a whole bunch of policies. For example, some people think that it's unfair. Internet speeds are faster in urban areas than in rural areas, and there hasn't been a lot of investment in infrastructure, so they think that net neutrality is going to be the solution to this, and it's not. But let's just discuss really quick, what is the Title II regulation? Under Title II regulation, this comes from the Communications Act of 1934. The ISPs would be subjected to universal service requirements. That means they'd be required to fix bottlenecks that would be caused by comparatively slow local infrastructure, that they could be theoretically. Telephone companies are required to wire up every house. ISPs would be required to bring infrastructure up to a minimum standard. So it's basically just a handout to rural internet customers. And in exchange for the regulatory burdens, the FCC has the power to set prices at a level that allows ISPs to make money. You know, the cost of internet access would no longer be subject to market forces. Basically, that's what the public utility would mean. So there would be no chance that internet services could go down because they basically would demand a certain profit. The companies would say, hey, since we're regulated as a utility, we demand a certain amount of profitability, so prices would theoretically rise. So let's talk about some of the risks. You know, they're saying, hey, what could conceivably happen versus what might actually happen? So the nightmare scenario is that the internet becomes more expensive and less convenient, and it becomes harder for small content producers to compete. Like me. Don't kill me. But what might conceivably happen? That's what might conceivably happen now. Here's what's actually happening. The federal government is basically using the internet right now for what Babcock here describes as a global panopticon, which is sort of a fancy name for a prison, capable of accessing everyone's personal information at any time for any reason or no reason, which we know is true. If the government can compromise private data custodians, encryption loses a lot of its efficacy. This is what happened to Google. They've had their internal traffic bugged by the NSA. There was the LavaBit, which was a secure email provider, which they wanted to shut down rather than sort of turn over their traffic to the government. So, you know, I try not to be paranoid about this stuff, but one of the things we don't want to see happening is giving the government more control over the internet so that they can use this power to spy on us. And that's the kind of thing we want to be careful of. They had this program called the Operation Choke Point, which they put pressure on banks to refuse to deal with people engaged in businesses that the Obama administration didn't like. And that's another thing that you want to be really careful about, because when the internet's a public utility, the government will step in and demand that certain businesses provide certain types of services. So that's something that you've got to be careful of too. Now, what do I think the real issue here is that we have to talk about, ladies and gentlemen? Because I think that this is the one thing that's gone under the radar. This is the discussion that we need to have about the internet, and we're probably not going to be able to have it just because it takes way too much in-depth research and thinking about for most people. But if you're a listener to the Freedom Report podcast, you're probably the type of person who likes to get granular, who likes to discuss the details. And you know what? I've been doing some research on trying to find out what the solution is to this problem, because you see, we do have a problem with the ISPs. You know, it's not a technical monopoly, because as Nick Gillespie pointed out, you do have choices. You've got, just like you have choices between Republicans and Democrats, you can go, you've got the evil party and the stupid party, right? You've got Comcast, or you've got Verizon, or Time Warner, for example. So you've got choices. Oh, yes. You've got two choices. You've got communists or fascists. But really, the real problem is that we need more choice. And in order to fix broadband competition, we have to, I think, kill the state level laws. These are the state level protectionist laws that are written by the people who want to keep the two major providers in power. See, this is the same kind of thinking that keeps in Republicans and Democrats, this binary thinking that we have here. It's happening here in the marketplace, aided by the government. And I found an article that I want to read to you from today, which is fantastic. It breaks down exactly what I think is the problem here. This is by a man named Carl Bode, and he's writing on Tech Dirt. And the article's title is called, "If You Want to Fix U.S. Broadband Competition, Start by Killing State-Level Protectionist Laws Written by Duopolists." And this is from the long overdue department, right? And Carl wrote this back in March before net neutrality really became a huge issue later in the year. He says, "For 15 years, I've watched as phone and cable duopolies lobby to pass draft legislation designed to keep broadband uncompetitive. Specifically, in more than a dozen states, these protectionist measures either hinder or outright ban a town or city's ability to wire itself for broadband, even in cases where nobody else will. If the laws don't ban such efforts outright, they force anyone looking to build a broadband network to jump through layers upon layers of bureaucratic hoops, during which the regional duopolies with limitless budgets harass the efforts with lawsuits and negative publicity campaigns." Carl Bode says that he's seen push pollsters to tell locals a government-built network would ban their religious programming. So Carl Bode is saying here that it's illegal for a government or a local city government to build their own broadband and compete with the marketplace. Obviously, Carl is sort of, you know, more of a social democrat on this issue. He probably wants free government cable, you know, and all of that pushed by the government. And he's angry that the cable companies have pushed for laws banning that, right? Well, you know, there shouldn't be laws saying that cities can't set up their own broadband. It's not something that I agree with, but, you know, you've got to have some sort of federalism on this. It's probably something that I would oppose at the local level, but I wouldn't oppose getting rid of the laws that ban it. Again, that's that to me is anti-market. The worst part of these bills is that they're simply duopolists buying laws that keep towns and cities from making regional infrastructure decisions for themselves, whether that's building their own core fiber network or developing a public-private network build partnership. Carriers get to have their cake and eat it too. They're not going to build you better broadband networks, but they're not going to let anybody else do it either. Some of these projects work, some don't, but if the country is serious about improving broadband competition, these bills have got to be the first thing that we look at. There's a lot of these bills that were passed without debate. There was no public scrutiny, no tech press attention, and when they were noticed, they were defended using traditional partisan tropes. Locals simply trying to get connected by any means necessary, usually vilified and portrayed as, quote, government meddling with industry. It's a shame, like, which obviously the government was already already meddling with this industry. Fortunately, with Google Fiber's entry into the market, I've seen a renewed flurry of interest and attention on these bills, in a large part because several would have impacted Google Fiber's expansion, and Google Fiber appears to have captured the imagination of the public. So in Kansas, cable operators ran into a bit of a chainsaw when they attempted to ban towns or cities in the state from running their own fiber or working with partners like Google Fiber. Isn't that ridiculous? There was this bill, SB 304, which allowed such claimed to allow such efforts if they targeted unserved customers. But then they sneakily defined unserved as someone unable to get satellite or a cellular dial tone, ensuring that nobody would get that designation. So in Utah, SB 190 was a bill pushed by a regional company called CenturyLink. They also won't be surviving this year, in part to the new attention Google Fiber has brought to the issue. Excuse me, the bill won't be surviving this year. SB 190, that's in Utah. Now, a few years ago, these bills would have flown through state legislatures without a mention, and for the first time in many years, these there's a lot of pushes to roll back some of these protectionist measures. So in Tennessee, there's four different bills in process that would roll back some of these incumbent-friendly bills, and they're coming from both sides of the aisle. John Brodkin at Ars Technica notes how local ISPs quickly complained about the sea change. Listen to this. "We are particularly concerned about four bills that have been introduced this session," Tennessee Telecommunications Association's chief Levoy Noel said in an announcement. "The TTA claimed to be presenting concerns of rural customers, but are more worried about the potential of losing customers. These bills would allow municipalities to expand beyond their current footprint and offer broadband in our service areas. If this were to happen, municipalities could cherry-pick our more populated areas, leaving the remote rural customers to bear the high cost of delivering broadband to these less populated regions," Noel said. Oh, and then, yes, God forbid, you'd have to face a new competitor and adjust your business model accordingly. You might even have to work with the local government to determine what works best in each region. Meanwhile, Google Fiber's announcement to help 34 cities in 9 regional markets examine local fiber needs should bring greater attention to the issue. Google intentionally targeted regions like North and South Carolina, where incumbent Time Warner passed protectionist bills a few years ago after they tried 4 times. So it took 15 years, but we're only just starting to see people realize that perhaps letting your regional duopolists write laws dictating what you can and can't do for your community might not be the best idea. So Carl Bode has identified the problem here, and he seems to be offering the correct solution. We need to repeal the laws that ban a town or city's ability to decide what it wants, what kind of broadband it wants. And there's a lot of problems. I come from a rural area in Missouri, especially where it's very difficult to get access not only to cable television, but internet as well. And my father's had to go through a lot of hoops in order to get it. He's not going to be able to get Google Fiber, unfortunately, even though he's in the Kansas City area. So he's had to resort to a sort of a satellite connection that's more expensive and offers him slower speeds than he'd be able to get because of his location out in Peculiar, Missouri. So what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Do you think that the problem here is that we have a protectionist scheme going on? And don't you think that net neutrality is necessarily going to add to that, that the big cable companies are going to be the ones writing this type of legislation? They're going to be the ones who are ingrained. They're going to want make sure that their bottom line is taken care of. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Is this the discussion we need to be having about net neutrality? Do me a favor, go to thelibertarianrepublic.com and send me an email. Tell me what you think. Also, don't forget to visit our sister site, Liberty Viral, and come back every single home to your home for economic, every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.